Hello and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, February 22nd, 2010. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. Wow, I cannot believe the people who are checking in this morning for Indie Business Roll Call. If you haven't checked in yet, head on over to our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/indiebusinessfans and make sure everyone knows you are present and accounted for. You know, in today's economy and with the challenges of small business ownership anyway, we want to make sure that we don't lose a single entrepreneur. No business should fail for lack of support from other business owners, and also no business should fail for lack of strategic planning. And to help us tackle that issue today, we have none other than a fantastic expert on the topic. His name is Hank Moore. He is the author of The Business Tree, Growth Strategies and Tactics for Surviving and Thriving. As a corporate strategist, Hank Moore speaks and advises boards of directors, CEOs, and executive teams about profitable future building and increased shareholder value. The topics he covers include everything. We're talking about shaping business trends, anticipating economic challenges and opportunities, corporate responsibility and ethics, creating and rebuilding corporate cultures, new ways of doing business in the future, and we all need to be aware of that, of course, especially in this changing economy, and so many other things. He conducts corporate visioning, independent performance reviews, strategic planning, and growth strategies for organizations of all sizes. I'm so excited. We have him all to ourselves for the next hour. So welcome to the show, Hank.
My pleasure to be with you.
If you're listening to the show at IndieBusinessRadio.com, don't forget that you can click on the chat link and join us in the chat room live and ask your questions, and we will make sure that Hank gets those and we answer those on the air. I want to welcome you to the show, everyone who is out there, especially Lisa at Blue Moon Candles, who's already logged on and is with us today. It's great to have you here, Lisa. So, you know, Hank, let's start with a little bit about your background. You've been counseling businesses for such a long time. I'm intrigued by the Silver Foxes. Tell us a little bit about that and how you started helping businesses in such a big way.
Well, I did it long before the Silver Foxes. I'm actually president-elect. The Silver Fox Advisors is a think tank, and it's a group that's been around for about 25 years. In fact, I'm going to be president of it next year, and a lot of my good friends are in it. A lot of the people that are members of it are retired CEOs and people that have been involved with business, at running businesses for a very, very long time. And a lot of the mentor program, they've created CEO roundtable programs for that chambers of commerce get their members involved in. And so the objective is to really get people in at a baseline level. Yes, a large percentage of the companies that I've worked with are the largest corporations in America, but small business, which accounts for 99% of all businesses in America, I've worked with quite a few of them too, and I've worked with probably of my 5,000 clients over the years, I've probably worked with about 200 nonprofit organizations. I was involved in the early 90s after the Aramony scandal helping United Way reorganize, and I've been involved with a lot of small companies and startups, and I'm just a very, very big fan of small businesses in general, and I think that's probably the bulk of who's listening today. I think a lot of small business, the number one question that I get a lot as I travel around, and I've been doing this for a long time. I started very young, but I've been doing this for over 40 years. Advising companies is not necessarily something one retires into. You know, you develop and you do it. So, I mean, I do what I've been doing for a very, very, very long time. And the number one question comment that I get from a lot of small businesses, and this is kind of my way of patting small business on the back to kind of get the discussion going. A lot of small businesses say, gee, you know, you work with all those big guys. You've worked with Texaco and Marriott and Disney and Hewlett-Packard and all those people. And boy, as a small business, if I had their resources, the things I could do, to which my answer is usually pat yourself on your back, count your blessings that you don't have their problems.
Right.
That you don't
right.
have their bureaucracies. My experience, and this is the nicest thing I can say to small business people, because I firmly believe it. I think that might kind of set the basis for our talk today. I've done a lot of studies of small businesses. You know, there's a lot of research on them. 66.7% of small businesses cannot grow any further than they are right now. There's a terribly high failure rate. But yet, given the statistics that are against small business, there are a lot of very good people doing the right things for the right reasons. They
well,
may not use
me,
the
let
fancy.
Let me ask you this, if I could. I want to
uh-huh. sure.
that if you don't mind. You just said that 67 or thereabouts percent of small businesses can't grow any more than they are right now?
Yes, there's this thing in our society, I say thing, this fervor in our society of grow, grow, grow for the sake of growth. That mentality is what caused the current business downturn, which I refer to as a business correction process. Business really should see a lot of what's gone on in the last couple of years as a wake-up call to what lies ahead, which means if they keep their mind on what they're doing, they'll move further. Well, anyway, yeah, a lot of companies, and everyone thinks they have to get really big, or they merge and they turn into roll-ups. And a lot of the really big roll-ups, such as AOL, Time Warner, such as Hewlett-Packard, Compaq, such as a lot of them, didn't work. So what you found was some of these mega companies that got too big are now recoiling. And, yeah, the research, this is Harvard Business School research, that 66.7% of all businesses cannot grow any further than they are now, and that 44% of all companies should not grow into a large corporation. 36.2% have limited life expectancies and are destined to be acquired by a larger company. So that's one aspect that a lot of small businesses, people that are talking right now, are thinking, how can I mine the gold in this asset long enough to flip it? And particularly in local service industry type businesses, a lot of them can plan and strategize and posture themselves to be sold to someone else. Of course, that also means you as the entrepreneur need an exit strategy, because there's always a next project, there's always a next calling. We all have them.
Well, and let's talk about that. I like that you're talking about the corrective process. Of course, we're all in the middle of that now, but speaking of the current economy and the correction that's going on, what are some of the things that you know in working with small businesses? And of course, Hank, when we say small, we're talking micro here for our listeners today.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the most effective things that we can be doing that will maximize our time? Because we have to be really efficient. We're oftentimes
right.
one, two, three person operations.
That is correct.
Or, but so many are very, very small. What are some of the things that you know that small business owners must be doing now and is a really good investment of their time to prioritize in this economy?
First of all, understand that there has to be a big picture. Too many small business people, they're widget kind of people, but once they start running a widget company, that's when the headaches begin. A lot of small business and a lot of entrepreneurs will say, gee, when the fun stops, I want to go away. Are you the person who kind of helps me make a business out of this? A lot of times I say, no, I'm the person who comes in after you've gone to the wrong consultants and you've gotten kind of tossed around by the wrong people for the wrong purpose, and says, look, guys, let's get back to basics. Number one recommendation for small businesses, understand that there is a big picture. Don't get too micro-niche focused. That's the biggest problem with business in America, too much micro-niche focus, keeping business from articulating any kind of a big picture. Number two, benefit from change. You know, everything that's gone on right now could be thought of, and I'd like small business people to think of it, as the current business correction process, as a blessing in disguise. Benefit from change. And strategic planning, by the way, a strategic plan does not have to be a 3-inch thick document that sits on a shelf and gathers dust. That happens in corporate America. But for a small business, it can be a couple or pages. One of the first things that I recommend small businesses to do when they're sitting there determining who they want as their ideal customers and who their marketplace could be, think first of who you don't want. Rule them out first. Look at what your competition has done wrong. That's what the current, you know, and benefit from change. You know, research also tells us that change, that word that a lot of people fear because change is related to fear, change is 90% positive. So why do people fear what's in their best interest? And research also shows that the average person and the average organization changes at the rate of 71% per year. Now, the question is the change for the good or the change for the bad? While a lot of companies are still playing the blame game about what's happened in the past couple of years, and they're the same people that are still playing the blame game about the Enron corporate scandal period, and they're still playing the blame game after the dot-com bust, The common thread, and I've been saying a lot of these things, you understand when times are fat and happy and good, people don't want to hear from me as much as when times are tough. And I'm not trying to say I told people so, but what I'm trying to say is learn from the cycles. Go back and learn the lessons we should have learned. And small business could learn to benefit from change, really look at what other people are doing and really messing up royally. That's where your marketplace opportunities come from. Next thing that I recommend is look at what you've been spending and what to build your business in a wasteful manner and find creative ways of cutting down the waste. And for 1- and 2- and 3-person businesses, that's very vital. I mean, it's really vital for companies of all sizes. 1/3 of our gross national product is currently predicated on the fact that problems occur. 1/3 of our GNP is spent cleaning up mistakes. It happens in Washington. That's a whole other topic for another show. It happens in all aspects of business. And there are whole professions, such as environmental cleanup people and lawyers and accountants, who would all tell you, look, guys, if you'd only brought us in sooner rather than later, these coins wouldn't have stacked up.
Hank, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned this list, and it's a really good list. I want to hone in before our first break, though, on one of them. You said,
sure,
don't get too micro-niche focused. What do you mean by that?
Micro-niche means I'm a widget person. I'm always going to think like a widget person. At some point, every small business owner needs to think like the customer. Like somebody other, they need to get out of their own skin. When I devised the business tree model, and I originally did that about 15 to 20 years ago, and in the book is a recitation of successful case studies that have been judged against it. It basically takes the premise, and I'll say it kind of in less than a minute. I'll say the short version. Most businesses, there's five main categories of every business, and 99.999% of every small business person, every employee of every company fits in one of five categories. Number one, core business. That would be what the widget is. Number two, and that represents really only 12% of what the business principle's emphasis should be. Number two, branch two, is running the business, and that includes the technology, the plant, the equipment, the making the widget. That's another 12%. Branch three is, and I describe all these at complete length in the book, branch three is financial. And that's 10%. Now, you add 1, 2, and 3 is about as far as most small business people ever get. They say, oh, well, you know, we're up to our neck in alligators, and we're too busy running the business. So that branches 1, 2, and 3, 34% of the overall pie, or tree, in my case, represent 100% to them. That means that the two biggest branches on the tree never get tended to, and thus the tree, which is an analogy for the company, will wither and die. Branch four is people. best, most important commodity in every business. And that's where your training and your quality management and your team building and all that stuff goes. Branch five is business development. What does everybody cut when times are best? Business development costs, advertising, PR, marketing, those very vital things that are so important to growing the business. So, but and that's 23%. Now, there's everybody in business, every consultant fits somewhere on one of those five categories. There are a handful of us that are category six, which is the trunk of the tree, and seven, which is the big picture. And so what I wind up trying to tell business owners and principals and employees to do is if they can look outside their own niche and they can see the relationship of what they do to all of the other branches, then that is a growing business.
There's a lot of connectivity that we need to focus on, and we're definitely going to delve into that.
Has to be.
Segment. I'm so excited to have all this great information from Hank Moore today. He's the author of The Business Tree. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We are having a fantastic discussion this afternoon with Hank Moore, the author of The Business Tree, Growth Strategies and Tactics for Surviving and Thriving. And if you were with us in the first segment, you know that he's divided up, you know, how a business runs into seven categories or seven pieces of the tree, as he describes it in his book. Hank, because our listeners today are small micro businesses, I really want to pick up on what you said about the first three parts of the tree, the core business, running the business, and the financial end. And you said that those three things, those three of seven things, amount to approximately 34% of what it takes to run a successful business.
That's correct.
And you also said, correct me if I'm wrong, because I really want to get this for our listeners, I think you said that's where pretty much everybody starts, but if you don't move beyond that, that is, if you don't start to tackle people and hire some people, and you don't deal with advertising, PR, and marketing, your business cannot possibly grow.
That is correct.
Let's talk about small businesses at the level where they're at the beginning. How do they know when it's time to tackle things like hiring people? That's a huge issue. We all start with, you know, one, maybe two people. A lot of times we're married
right.
to the second person.
Right.
What happens? How do you know when your business is capable of handling employees, new people, bringing in the talent, both from a financial perspective
mm-hmm.
as well as from a, you know, a human resource and an administrative perspective?
Theoretically, you should do it at the very beginning when the business is founded. People a lot of times jump in feet first and don't think to plan. You should get a mentor, someone who can help you balance. And a good mentor is someone who's been there. And for a lot of small businesses, people tend to get mentors from their industry. Let's say you're in the plumbing business or pest control or one of the very important human service service industry businesses, you talk to someone who's been there and who will, and the mentor will always tell you, start with a plan and then determine how as a 1-2 person operation you're going to get to the expansion process. Know when it's time to expand, because if you don't start out there, you're going to stay stuck in that quagmire, and that's why the failure rate for most small businesses is 33% per year. Now, I think a lot of small businesses should fail because they never became a real business. There are a lot of businesses out there that people run as hobbies or as their ego or something else. You know, they'll say, oh, I'm downsized from some corporation. Now I'm going to be an entrepreneur. A lot of them don't have the entrepreneurial mindset. So having someone sit down with you and plan on the front end is going to save you an awful lot of grief.
Okay.
And
now,
then you refine what your core business is, and then what it's going to be, because what most small businesses start out to be and what they become are two different things.
You know, and I've seen that they're almost always two different things, and mm-hmm. that's a good thing, right? Because that means that you have adapted well, and you have changed when you needed to change.
And you've watched how your competitors refused to change.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where you learn. You're constantly looking outside your tree.
Very good.
And you're looking at factors in the marketplace. That's mm-hmm. what Category 6 is about, the trunk and the grounds, where you're constantly looking at what other people are doing wrong, and you're improving on it. You know, there's in the categories of small business, really there's seven categories of small business, in my words. Number one, retail. Number two, build a new mouse trap. That means you've got a widget idea that hasn't existed before. Category number three, and a lot of small businesses are like this, what I call cloning a mouse trap. There are a lot of companies that don't innovate the processes. They just steal them from other people and improve upon them. And then in some cases, the fourth category of small business is where you pursue some kind of a dream that someone else started elsewhere. You may have started it at another company and it didn't come to fruition. Someone else may have tried to create a new product or service and it didn't work for them, but maybe you could do it. And then you get into these, the next category would be a transition company. In other words, you're going to nurture the asset long enough so that you know you can flip it. And that happens a lot in service industry type businesses. You're going to grow it to a certain level, and then you're going to flip it, sell it to someone else, sell it as a roll-up. Then the next category would be what I call just for the bucks. There are some people that start up companies that they know are going to be a very attractive asset. That's what the dot-com bust was about. Some of the companies that were started up were scams, but a lot of them were glimmering future opportunities that later became real companies. And then the seventh category, and this is where I would imagine many, if not a large percentage of your listeners, are in the category of professional services. And that includes everything from accountants to website designers to environmental engineers to whatever. Professional services, that's a whole topic for a whole other show. Professional is professional does. I have my favorite chapter in the new book is called Collaborations, Partnering, and Joint Venturing. And of the 200 case studies that are in the book, 50 of them are in that one chapter. And basically, it shows individual entrepreneurs and small businesses how to work with others and create opportunities that none of them could have done by themselves. So that professional services arena is where most of the small business growth is going to continue to be as we get past the economic downturn and, you know, try to stave off the next economic downturn, which I'm predicting to be in about 4 years.
Okay, well, gee, we will definitely save that for another show.
Yeah.
But that's good to know, because we've got, you know, many things, as you're describing, that we can do to prepare ourselves for that so it doesn't catch us off guard. I want to go back for a bit, Hank, to what you said about the mindset. Do you expect that because of the increased downsizing and layoffs that are going on right now, Do you expect that the small business failure rate will also increase over the next several years because so many people are starting a business because they feel like they have to and they don't ever take the time to adapt and adopt the mindset that you're speaking about, the strategic planning mindset that you're sharing here today?
Yes, and there will be more, and a lot of the people that are going into small business are probably not suited to do it, but a lot of them, they may think that's their only way out. The danger of more people coming into a cluttered marketplace makes it tough for the really good small business people. And I'm not just talking about the serial entrepreneurs who've had many, many different businesses, but there are a lot of people who are small businesses, who are very good, who do what they do, and yet they have to constantly look over their shoulder because there's a lot of bad apples in their industry. One of the things that I've been involved in recently is judging an awards competition for the Better Business Bureau. And you're talking about the smallest of small business, you know, computer service firms and plumbers and roofing contractors and so on and so forth. And it's heartwarming to read the narratives. They may not use the fancy lingo that I use or you use or some of us use, and they don't talk about corporate cultures and all that kind of stuff, but what they talk about chapter and verse is taking care of the customer. And real small business people, as opposed to forced into the arena small business people, understand that it's all about customers. And yes, there'll be more entrants, but the really good people, the cream will continue rising to the top.
And what about the people who do feel like they're forced into it? Well, maybe forced is not the right word that I'm quite looking for, but certainly I think more people are seeing it as a viable option or something that they would consider that they may never have considered before. I'm certain, as you say, that many of them will fall by the wayside because that's going to happen anyway, right? But let's talk to them. Let's talk to them because we want them to feel as though there are things that they can do to maximize their chances, right? So what are some of the things a newly laid off person, maybe they do have a little bit of money that they can actually use to, you know, get something launched. What do they need to do? You said get a mentor, and that's good, but what specific things do they need to adapt their mindset to in order to really recreate themselves to maximize their chances of success?
They need to be really real about, is this a real business? Is this a, you know, have you done any research? A lot of times people open up businesses just on a whim. That's not a strategy or an advertising slogan. That's not a strategy. That comes later. But what they really need to think about is where the opportunities are. You know, I mean, among the industries that I would say try to avoid that have been most overrated and most affected by the recession, you're talking restaurants where the failure rate is 90% of all new restaurant starts die in the first year. You're talking about direct sales, online retail, high-end retail. They've all been very, very hurt. So if someone says, hey, I'm going to start up a new online retail website, I would say get real, because 98% of all websites don't make any money. A lot of them are illustrated brochures. And then you get into independent consulting. I would tell a lot of people, you know, here I was tooting the horn of independent consultants a couple of minutes ago. I would say, do you have a consultant mentality? A lot of people say, oh, I don't want to work for the man anymore. I want to tell everyone to shove it. I'm going to go into business for myself. Anyone who's really in small business for themselves does not think that way and does not talk that way. They get really good dealing with people. You had mentioned when we first talked about multitasking. That's the mark of a good small business person. Can they multitask? I've found that good small business people wear about 10 hats every day. And you know what? They get pretty darn good at about 8 of them, which is 7.5 hats more than the average corporate mid-manager ever gets good at. Problem with corporate America, mid-manager mentality. Very myopic. Keep your head down, keep your mouth shut, and do what you're told sequentially. A lot of people come out of corporate America and they've been brainwashed by that mindset, and then they go into small business, and if they can't make the change, if they can't get mega customer oriented and very service oriented, and turn it into an art, then they should not be in small business. So that's what a lot of people really need to focus on, is this really something I want to do? Small business is not something one downsizes into or retires into. You've got to want it in your gut, and you've got to want to achieve something.
Yeah, that, those are all such great things to think about for those who are listening. If you're starting a business, if you're already in a business and you're looking to do some strategic planning, we're having a great conversation today with Hank Moore, author of The Business Tree, Growth Strategies and Tactics for Surviving and Thriving. And, you know, Hank, I got to tell you, we have one more minute till we take our break. You know, what you're saying is, you know, it's hard to hear, but I think so many of us, and I'm talking to myself and everyone else as well, really need to hear how important it is to be real and to really assess, you know, the realities of the marketplace, whatever it is that we're going to do. I'm wondering if, you know, all these people who may want to have a business but may not be able to make the turn and adapt the mindset that you're talking about, maybe, you know, with all the other people out there who are starting businesses and do have that mindset, it's a great way to get some freelance opportunities to work with some of those businesses in a collaborative way, I would think. Maybe
absolutely.
If you don't have a mindset, then as you said, one of the biggest chapters in your book, we're going to come back and ask you some questions about how to know whether we're suited for this and what we can do if we're not. Because, you know, we don't want to be standing in a soup line. We'd rather, you know, figure out a way to earn some money. So we're going to come back and talk with Hank Moore, author of The Business Tree, about that. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to The Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to The Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. We're here today with Hank Moore, author of The Business Tree, and we are racing through some exciting and really good and important information that he's sharing with us. Now, Hank, before we took our break, we were talking about how all the downsizing, the layoffs are resulting in many more people than, you know, quote-unquote normal, wanting to have a business of their own. We talked about, you know, how important it is to have the mindset and how some people just don't have it and there'd be a waste of time for them to perhaps start a business. But let's talk to the people who do have it, but they're stressed right now, that they're you know, it's a challenge in this economy. Maybe they've just started out. They do have what you described as that drive. They do have a customer service-oriented personality. They know what it takes. They're learning what it takes. They're embracing it. But, you know, they just got to get through this hump. What words of encouragement do you have for
people? Well, the first word I'm going to use, it's a word that I learned about 10 years ago. It's called potlatch, P-O-T-L-A-C-H-E. It's in the book. It's not a drug. Potlatch is a term from Native American lingo. It means I give to you, you give back even exponentially to me, the business of giving gifts. What does that mean for small business? The best thing I can recommend anyone to do at any phase of their business, even if they're a great big company that's been in business forever, go ask people what they think more often than telling people that they need to buy what you have. It's if every company of any size would have an advisory board, and that doesn't have to be a big elaborate thing, a handful of people whose opinion you deeply respect and who will tell you how to keep it real. If you do that, if the smallest of companies has a handful of people and they can tell them, you are my advisory board, you don't pay them anything, but their insights that they're going to give you is going to be the potlatch. They're going to give you wisdom. They're going to be honored to be asked for their opinion. And you know what's going to happen after that is they're going to start making business referrals.
Is this different from masterminding, Hank? What's the difference between?
It's essentially the same thing. Yeah. I mean, but it's not just about networking. There's a lot about networking that's counterproductive to businesses. You know, it's because some people want to take advantage of other people. The best kind of networking and the best kind of potlatch is to where all sides get something out of it. I mean, I've gotten calls, so many calls from people all the time saying, complaining that their network, all they get is people saying, send me the business, thank you very much. They say, how can we work together? Well, taking advantage of one side is not working together. So my first recommendation in that respect is understand who your friends are and who your friends are not. Understand who your customers are and who your customers are not. And that way you don't waste all of your time on the 80-20 rule, you know, spending 85% of your time on the smallest number that's not going to be as productive for you. The other piece of advice to the smallest and business is really look at the customer base and understand what it would cost you to lose every single customer. Research tells us that retaining 2% of your customers from deflecting elsewhere has a bigger impact on your bottom line than cutting 10% out of operating expenses.
Hey, let's say that one more time. Can you repeat that?
Retaining your customers from leaving is going to make you, it's going to improve your bottom line 5 times more than cutting expenses.
So what, let me, I'm
retaining 2% of your customers from leaving, from going to a customer. And, you know, for small business, the biggest customer loss is not necessarily to another company. It's people who say, I can get by without that service for right now. So you have to be sure to keep people using that service and understanding that you care about them. And if you do that, then you don't have to necessarily fire people or make cuts. So it's 2%.
Retaining 2% of your customers is more effective than increasing your customer base by what percent?
No. It has the same effect on your bottom line as cutting 10% out of operating expenses. When times are tough, the accountants and those kinds of consultants will constantly tell you, cut, 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 cut. When really, if you would shore up and protect the business, you're not going to have to make the cuts. You're not going to have to lay people off. You're not going to have to fire people if you've really got that customer base taken care of. Now, and then there's another category called stakeholders, which I talk about in the book. People who are not necessarily, and that's not shareholders, it's people who are affected by your company. And sometimes it's the customers of your customers. So by meeting with your customer once a year, and not just to render the service, or not just to collect the bill, it's to say, let's talk really about your business. Let's really talk about your situation. And is there anything we can do that we're not doing? We are here for you. How can we be here for you more? If customers, small business does that more, they don't have to lay off.
So this is so good. So let's talk about those of us who are selling products. We sell retail and we sell wholesale. So on the wholesale side, you're saying that one of the most effective things we can do is call up those retail customers, those boutiques, those stores that carry our products, and have this kind of conversation with them.
Yes.
Good.
And sometimes you can convert retail customers to wholesale and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got a client that's in the plastics industry, and they make plastic coating that goes on, you know, cars and buildings and all this kind of stuff. And part of our strategy was, you know, they kept complaining about these installers. Oh, these people have no business sense. They think like installers rather than small business people. They don't treat customers right. And my point was, well, can't you get rid of some of them and hire your own? But then then that gets into the question of when are you the wholesaler and when are you the retailer, but then that changes. And the internet has helped change that, because sometimes what people sell direct online, wholesalers become retailers.
Yes,
you have to reshuffle the definition of what your business is. And that gets into, and once you start doing that, that cuts across all five of the major branches. You don't make one major change in your company without affecting the whole thing. I was working with a company recently, and they make pieces of equipment that, how shall I call it, the tubes and boxes. You know, you ever wonder at chemical plants, how do they maintain the quality control? What about the flow of the oil to the wellhead? All that kind of stuff. Well, these processes were started by all these people who used to be plant chemists, and they left the plants or downsized, and they started running small businesses. Well, years later, they haven't added people to their industry. They're all 70 years old, about to retire. Who's going to take their place? Who's going to make the tubes and boxes? So part of my work with them is to say, and by the way, guys, you're only getting about 15%. If some of you would roll up, you're only getting 15% of your potential marketplace. If all these chemical plants and whatever don't have on-staff chemists, why don't you sell consulting services? And so then that just changes the dynamic of what your branch one core business is, and it's driven by those other factors. Then you get into the question, can we make the change from a tube and box manufacturing mindset to a consulting mindset?
Right. I'm actually seeing an increasing number of people trying to do that today. It's a really interesting time to watch that happen. But I love what you said about staying in touch and massaging, so to speak. That's my word. I know, not yours. But really talking to those customers. I remember, Hank, many years ago when I used to buy supplies for a cosmetics business that I used to own, when I would go in to the wholesale area to pick up my supplies, in the back of the room in the corner was a guy with a headset. And he sat there with a cup of coffee, and he was saying the same thing every time I went to the store. He was automatically dialing customer numbers. I think these were their retail customers who bought their products wholesale and then resold them in their stores or used them to create products. And he would say, hi, this is so-and-so. I'm calling from so-and-so, and I'm just calling to see how you're doing today.
Right.
And oftentimes, sometimes it would be a voicemail that picked up. You could tell that no one was on the other end. But frequently, he would end up having conversations with people that went something like this. I am so glad you called. I was just thinking about you. I haven't had time to call you, but I do need some more of your stuff. Can you take my order right now?
That's right. You use that as a selling opportunity. And furthermore, you could change. I mean, I've written a service line for people before. Instead of just saying, how are you doing, saying, hey, so-and-so, give me a success story. Tell me the greatest thing that's happened this month. And inevitably, you get them to start not only telling you things are going great, but they will tell you how great.
Right.
You get them to say, this is what we did with your product, and these were the results on our stakeholders. In other words, if you get the customer to focus more on the benefit of your product or service on their marketplace and their ability to do business, then there's where you shore up, and there's where you keep from losing customers. That's customer loyalty. You know, there's one other thing that I should stress, and before we run out of time, there's another section in the book about management styles. Customer-focused management right. is the dominant management style and has been for about 10 years. However, most people in business have never heard of the term. Why?
Well, we want to make sure that we get to that
yes.
if we can. If we can't, I want you
yeah.
to get Hank's book. It's fantastic, The
yeah.
Business Tree. But we do have a question in the few minutes we have left from Lisa
Please.
At Blue Moon Candles. Hank, she wants to know, do you have any advice on ways to woo back a customer that's been disappointed? I recently had a shipping problem, and a customer was very unhappy with the weight. I want to convey how valued they are. Any advice for me?
Call them back and say, we just want to make sure this doesn't happen again. Tell me one more time what we did wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with taking a mea culpa. I mean, Tiger Woods did it. Did he do a good job? Well, that's another topic for another show. Look at all these politicians.
What if you've done that already? What if you've done that already? Do you suggest sending flowers, free products?
Not, yes, in the case of a product, or more often than not, just keep a line of communication open. Part of that potlatch okay. idea is think of something you want to send more than just an apology. Send them a customer's product.
Okay, so
something
you're saying
that ties them back into the marketplace.
So you're saying even if you've done the apology and that doesn't win the customer back, you can certainly win them back over time simply by staying in touch with them and keeping the lines of communication open.
That's right. Real apologies are never accepted the first time anyway. You know, it's the old comment we used to say that you had to hear something seven times before it ever sunk in.
Right.
the current research shows that you have to hear it 21 times. Now, I'm not saying that you say you're sorry that many times, but it's that second or third time to say, we messed up with you, and we would like to someday win your business back. In other words, put it way off in the future.
Right.
We just wanted to know we care about it. Maybe that second time you don't call to apologize. You just call to say, we heard you, and we're trying to move forward. See,
right.
that line right there is a line
right.
that Exxon and Enron and those guys never say to this
right.
day.
And I suppose from what you're describing, too, it takes the pressure off the customer to feel like they have to accept the apology or place an order or something right now.
That's right. And sometimes just, and one way of doing it, by the way, is not necessarily with a phone call. You could have a group email. You know, it's kind of like, you know, like people write these family Christmas letters every year. What's wrong with writing a business letter every year to stay in touch with people who might have slid off and call it a report, call it an update, call it a friend's letter? You know, people use euphemisms at Christmas time. Why can't you do that for your business? I recommend that small businesses write that kind of a letter three times a year.
Good. Well, we definitely can use technology to help us do that. Hank Moore, thank you so much. Hank is the author of The Business Tree, Growth Strategies and Tactics for Surviving and Thriving. Hank, we have a few seconds left. What website should we go to find out more about you and get this book?
Well, all the major, Amazon.com has it, Barnes & Noble has it. My website is www.hankmoore.com. It's got excerpts from the book on it, including excerpts from my two previous books.
Great. So we're going to go to hankmoore.com and check him out. You can also find out more from him about Silver Foxes and the coaching and consulting programs that they offer. So happy to have you all here today. Next week, I am kicking off a new series on fitness. That's right. You can have a financially fit business, but if you're leading a business and you're not financially fit, or actually physically fit, there's a problem, and you need to take care of it. I'm taking care of it, and I am inviting you to come join me, talk about fitness, talk about how we can work together to help ourselves be strong, even though 9 out of 10 of us sits at a laptop all day long. Let's talk about this. Let's help each other be stronger and more fit. To help us do that, Kimberly Linton, she is a fitness trainer, and she's going to be joining us to discuss the importance of physical fitness to a successful business. We'll discuss how even the busiest entrepreneur can include fitness in their everyday routine. That's right here next week, March 1st, on Indie Business Radio. I'll see you then. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.